Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Allianz conference call on the financial results 2015. For your information, this conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to your host today, Mr. Oliver Schmidt, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. Good afternoon from my side as well, and welcome to our conference call. As you know, we have three presenters today. Oliver will kick it off and share his views on the result of 2015 and our way forward. Then, as always, Dieter will give you all the details, and finally, Max will talk about our investments. We have scheduled 2 hours for the call. That should give us about 1 hour for Q&A. In case that's not enough to cover your questions, please come and see us at one of our analyst meetings next week. We have scheduled one for Monday in London and one for Wednesday in Frankfurt. That's all from my side, and with that I hand over to Oliver. Thank you.
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody. Good evening to Asia, and good morning to those in the U.S. that are listening in. I'm going to keep it fairly quick before I hand over to Dieter, who in his usual high quality will deliver you the details of the financial numbers. Let me start out on page A2 of the document that you should have been able to download or see on the net, where we are giving an overview of the 2015 key figures. And we didn't manage for that, but coincidentally, we had the highest revenues ever at 125 billion euros in the 125th year of our existence. So that was a nice coincidence, up 2.4%, an all-time record. And we recorded 10.735 operating profit, up 3% from prior year. Shareholder income grew even more strongly, 6.3% to 6.6 billion, which we consider to be a very strong result given the environment and particularly given how peers in our sector are performing. Dividend per share is up 6.6% based on the proposal that we are making of €7.30. We rounded it up to €7.30. Our solvency ratio stands at a very strong 200% at the end of the year, up about 9 points. The returns have been good for those that had invested in Allianz properly last year, that you see on the right-hand side, but that is the past. But what I would like to summarize looking at the page, you see a very resilient company, very resilient numbers, and significant growth potential going forward. Now, let me give you my 50 cents on the performance of the group as highlighted on page 8.3. Both for the group and the individual segments, that is property casualty, life health, and asset management. From an overall perspective, we're happy to record 2.4% growth. Why? It doesn't look like a big number, but you should remember that we had announced last year that we would like to restructure our life business, in particular the new business, very consistently in an environment where interest rates are falling. And therefore, you see in the life segment a decline in the top line. Given that, you see strong growth in property casualty, a very strong number that I've hardly seen since I joined Allianz in 2008, and based on the strong US dollar, even asset management up despite the outflows of PIMCO. So overall, a positive number from my personal point of view. On operating profit, we've been careful, reached the upper end, 3.2% up, and that is a mix of 4.1% growth in P&C, an outstanding 14% growth in life and health, and as expected, a decline of profitability in asset management in line with the outflows, particularly at PIMCO. The return on equity remains strong. This is computed on average equity. And mind you, it's down from 13% to 12.5% on a consistent basis is basically remains unchanged and is the target. It also gives you an indication that we would like to focus on earnings growth in the future to make sure that earnings and dividends per share are growing from three sources: underlying organic growth, external growth, and if need be, share buybacks or other capital measures if that is required. However, that is not our preference. The preference is to have organic business growth, and then selective external growth. Now, when you look in terms at the segments in terms of returns, the P&C segment is at target, and I believe personally there is further upside in terms of managing capital efficiency, even in P&C. So you should see over time potentially stronger returns on invested equity. In the life and health segment, we are at 10.8. That is, as we discussed in the capital markets day, a mix of very good numbers in Germany and some further improvements that are necessary in the rest of the life portfolio. We're working vigorously on improving the return on invested capital in the life segment, and you can expect further improvements. And the return on equity in the asset management segment remains excellent at 15.2%. So overall, from my point of view and the board of management, very solid results. In the P&C segment, driven by very strong results in core Europe, where we can really play our scale advantages, where we can play our strengths across all channels. But we also have to bear in mind that we had some challenges in the year. Number one, slow progress in LATAM. But I would also like to mention what is not on the page, that we had to end the Fireman's Fund saga with some additional reserve strengthening in the beginning of the year that is impacting the AGCS results. Dieter will address that when he gets to the presentation. Now, you may have seen in the press announcement that we are getting rid of $1 billion of our long-term reserves in the U.S. That is, by the way, happening at book values, which tells you that the reserve level that we've achieved in the U.S. now are strong enough to be accepted for transfers, which tells you we have really fixed the reserve issues. And that should give you a lot of comfort that that is under control. In LATAM, we have to make significantly more progress next year, but there we are also confident that we're turning the dial. On life and health, let me reiterate that we are very proud to have successfully executed our new product strategy. There's more to come, but all the budgets in terms of shifting business from traditional products to new business have been overperformed. Let me really compliment our German colleagues, our Italian colleagues, and our French colleagues. In France, we now have 50% unit-linked share in new business. That was unthinkable a few years ago. So at this point in time, thank you to our colleagues, and that will continue. The second thing that we are addressing is the in-force business, and in particular where we have negative spreads, we're working very actively to address these books. This is not just an issue of profitability drag, but these books consume a lot of solvency capital and have a lot of interest rate sensitivity that we are trying to get rid of because that makes capital management more efficient. And that is really the objective of us addressing our back books, to make capital more efficient, make solvency more stable, and be able to lift capital out where we can. On asset management, Allianz Global Investors operating profits, it is at a new high. Let me compliment the colleagues here. Therefore, also supported them in the latest acquisition of Roger. They're, I think, doing a great job. At PIMCO, the net outflows are stabilizing. We have to further work on profitability, but that is on the way, and recent outflows are more or less in line with the industry. And as you can see from the performance fees that we were able to collect, that in effect means that we're doing really well on our alternative strategy, and we're only getting performance fees, of course, if we are overperforming relative to investor expectations. So that is good news, and there are more performance fees to come this year. So overall, a solid year that prepares us well for this very volatile environment that we believe offers great opportunities for a stable company like us that can balance volatility across the segments and across the markets. Now, let me also remind you on page A4 that we do have an attractive dividend policy. That is payout ratio that we increased to 50%. Let me also remind you of the ratchet that we have introduced and that we will pay out unused M&A budget if we don't use it. And just as a general comment, because there are lingering questions all the time, no, we're not planning outsized acquisitions. We're not planning to do M&A that is not accretive or doesn't meet our return hurdles. whether that is cost of capital or long-term 13% ROE question, in case you have that on your mind. That is, however, a long-term average. We're looking, if we do something, for bolt-on consistently with the record that we've built over the last few years. And therefore, we would also like to point out dividend per share growth has been 6.6% and is proposed to be 7.30, as you can see on the page. Page A5 gives you the overview of where we are relative to the original ranges that we have provided. While asset management is more towards the lower boundary, life has outperformed, and P&C is exactly in the middle, so that overall the group was trending towards the upper boundary. Now, some people have said that historically we've always outperformed our low boundary. Let me remind you, the laws of physics hold. You cannot continuously just go over the top. We have a boundary, and we have these corridors because given financial markets and given the economic environment, there is volatility, and we need to take care of that. That's why our outlook for the next year is also more cautious. It would be absolutely not prudent if we would not reflect in our outlook what's going on in the outside world, and I'm going to talk about it in a second. We are aiming at 5.5 as a middle ground for P&C, 3.6 as a middle of the band, and 2.2 in asset management. So on asset management, given the volatility in the markets, we are more cautious. That is not a mistrust in the businesses. That is just reflecting volatility and impact of lowering asset values that we are taking into account. Again, everything else would be not professional. Why do we believe that? Page A7 gives you an overview. If it wasn't enough that in our industry we are challenged through digitalization, low interest rates, the change of the business model, and increasing consumerism, conduct is a major issue that we are debating with regulators on top of all of the things that we continuously hear around Solvency II. By the way, as a side comment, it would be great if we could stop continuously inventing new charges, new risk capital ideas, but just let's move on after 10 years and apply the model. But we also have significant political and regulation uncertainty, not just within Europe and the Middle East, but in many parts of the world. Tensions are rising, in particular in commodity-dependent countries. The social environment is not benign. Therefore, the expectations for growth are rather moderate, and we expect that volatility in financial markets is going to continue. While we believe equity markets should recuperate and interest rates have to go higher, we saw an all-time low in the Bund today, which has nothing to do with underlying economics. It's just reflecting fear. We need to expect that markets will remain challenging, both from an interest rates perspective and an equity market perspective. And I'd also like to remind you, as we told you in November, that is our base case. We're not seeing this as a tail scenario. Allianz is planning and basing its strategy on an environment of ultra-low rates and high volatility going forward. We believe that is providing huge opportunities for us. As you look around in the sector, you see a lot of people that are weakened, and that should provide us with opportunities in many ways. So therefore, let me turn your attention to page A8. Just think about three core elements of our strength that are very important as you consider investment recommendations or investment decisions. The first one is scale. We absolutely believe this industry will prove that scale matters, both nationally but globally as well. Digitalization is the true force behind it. The ability, however, to also command outstanding performance in investment management, Max is going to talk about it, will make all the difference in the future. We are outperforming our peers in terms of providing better than benchmark returns to our clients. And our global lines are growing in importance with 3.3 billion operating profit in 15. It's a major source of future growth. On top of that, you have resilience. We have three segments with multi-billion euro earnings power. That is very important, as we had the boom on the asset management side that nicely balanced temporary weakness we had in Germany and other places on P&C. Now that we had the changes in asset management, the P&C and life segments are picking up. You rarely see that in other places. And now our capital is extremely strong. It's not just Solvency II in our rating. Please take a look at the source and the quality of our capital. We're one of the few companies that do not need huge amounts of, interestingly, computed value in force to support our capitalization. We have a very high quality of core capital. And while we are having equivalence, we are one of the companies that have the lowest benefit from equivalence rules for our overall capitalization as compared to almost any peer. So it's not just the level of capital, but also the quality of capital that is stronger in Allianz than in almost most of the places that I know. On top of that, we have a really top global brand. We just mentioned in the Brand Finance Global 500 ranking as the only one in the top 50 that is an insurer, and we're very proud of that. So if scale and resilience were not enough, we also outperform on skills. And we've changed the order. Historically, we would have talked about underwriting and claims excellence. That remains important. The number one thing we're looking at, the key steering metric, is going to be customer satisfaction and centricity. That's the transition we are making, because in the world that is moving from a push industry to a pull industry, that will separate the winners from the losers. We aim for a top quartile position here, and I'm confident we'll achieve that. On top of that, technical excellence will be at the forefront of what we do. We have very low combined ratio volatility, and mind you, again, we have, with our REO program, taken a lot of the external reinsurance and internalized that, and despite that, our volatility on the combined ratio has been fairly low. And last but not least, our people are outstanding, and the motivation of our people is outstanding, as we showed you on the Capital Markets Day. Therefore, our ambition for the next 3 years remains unchanged despite all the volatility, as you can see on A9, 13% ROE, which means capital has to be used efficiently, earnings per share growth as a three-year average of 5%. By the way, the number for 15 was 8%. And the health of the business is as important as the financials, maybe not for you, and at least for some people's spreadsheets, but for the long-term success of Allianz, customer satisfaction, to have 75% of our business being better than market, and having employees that get ever more motivated will make the difference for us in the future. And page A10 gives you a couple of details that I'd like to reiterate, both around performance and around health. We have a strongly pronounced regional and sectorial diversification with a number of very important leadership positions. We have low earnings volatility. I mentioned capital strength, not just in terms of its level, but also the high quality of its components. A conservative yet very innovative investment policy. Max is going to talk about it. Our ability to access alternative assets, I think, is almost unmatched. We have very limited exposure to peripheral sovereign debt, commodities, energy, and banking sectors, very unlike it was in the early 2000s. We are pushing for innovation. The Baidu joint venture, Allianz One, and many things are coming online now, and we are really moving our balance sheet. We are changing the life and health business mix, and we are working on the back book. So that gives you a lot of trust that performance in the future will be even better than in the past. While at the same time, we are banking on strong health of the company as a strong brand, focusing on customer satisfaction, having performance management moving from top down to a horizontal approach and making sure it's consistent, and making sure that leadership in Allianz is tied to how well we run our people, not just our numbers, and making sure that our people stay motivated. And with that, I thank you for listening and turn it over to Dieter.
Thank you very much, Oliver, and also from me, good afternoon, good morning to everybody on the call. The B section of the presentation, that is what we use every quarter, starts with a qualitative page on the renewal agenda and finishes with a quantitative page on the renewal agenda. Just that you have more time for questions, I will directly jump to page B5 and go into the numbers. So you have already heard all the headline figures. The P&C segment certainly contributed with a good increase in 2015, and then the stellar performance comes from the life and health segment, where actually asset management shows anticipated reduction in profitability, and the corporate segment, that is mainly an internal accounting issue with corporate, with our own pension, which I will talk about later. So net income at 6.6 billion, 6.3% up. We had a non-cash item in Q4 to book, that is a Korean or Asian life goodwill, which amounted to 171 million and then wipes out all life goodwill we had for our Asian operation. That is probably the number you were looking for and which created the miss. So let's look at the fourth quarter, actually a very good quarter in total on operating profitability, despite the fact that we had some headwind to overcome, in particular on the P&C side with man-made losses and some more cat events I will talk about later. Let's go to page 9. Shareholders' equity, 63 billion. It's actually a new high for our net asset value. The average return on equity, excluding the unrealized gains, a small drop of 40 base points, more explained by the strong growth of average equity and not the movement of the net income, which you have seen went up more than 6%. Sticking to our 50% payout ratio, so actually we are paying or proposing to pay slightly more than the 50% because 7.3 is the rounded number up. So I think we are, when you look just on the first pages, I would call it delivery on all promises. And I said actually in the third quarter earnings call that I would expect a good single-digit increase in dividend and net income. So page 11 shows the Solvency II capitalization, actually stayed completely flat compared to Q3. Why did it not go up where interest rates slightly moved up in Q4? Yeah, that's a very relevant question and also the right question. I asked the same question, and we got some last-minute changes in the calculation format driven by EIOPA technical paper. Number one was a change in the interest rate curve for Korea, so they moved the last liquid point earlier. The next one was the same change for the Swiss franc interest rate curve, and thirdly, they adjusted the calculation methodology for the risk margin. And all three changes together, they cost us about all equally the same. So in total, we lost 4 points in our solvency. So the one of you who would have expected 203, 204 were right to the spot because that was also my back of the envelope calculation. The sensitivities are unfortunately on the interest rate curve up compared to our Q3 number, and that has exactly the same explanation. The uptick in the interest rate sensitivity is driven by Switzerland and Korea Life and the change of the underlying interest rate curves. So probably a lot of you are now trying to guess what happened in the first 6-7 weeks of the year 2016. When you just use all the disclosed sensitivities, you can say, well, equity markets obviously down, interest rates down, credit spreads up on government bonds, credit spreads up on other bonds. The only offsetting element is that the volatility adjuster is also up, which offsets a little bit of the impact. But still, without doing anything, So that means when you assume we are a sleepy management, then it would go about 20 points. As we are working every day and not sleepy, we are working on compensating for it. And you will then see with the Q1 disclosure how awake we were. So on page 13, the internal growth figure at 2.9%, it's actually almost a 3%. Our midterm strategic target, internal growth of 3%, a pretty great achievement. In particular, what I think is a great start into 16, the price effects in Q4 were stronger than in previous quarters, so that even the average moved from the 0.5 we had before to the 0.8. I believe that is a very good start, good for most of our key markets, still not good enough for some of the underperforming markets, which Oliver addressed already. And here, I think Latin America I will touch on also a little bit later. Let's move on to page 15, the operating profit of the P&C segment and the combined ratio. Underwriting results more or less flat. Well, actually, our underlying net and premium is more than 6% up, so certainly a good driver for profit, in particular when you still see that we have a small upside against our 94 target in the combined ratio. Combined ratio, 94.6, I believe it is a very good one. The last quarter ended at 96.3, so some of you might have been disappointed, but actually compared to other announcements, I think it is a great result, and I don't want to hide behind the peer comparison. It is also a great result on a standalone basis. We had 6.4% of large losses of man-made nature in Q4 and a couple of more than 2 percentage points in cat losses. The cat losses are obvious. It's the Irish flooding, 2 UK floodings, and a hailstorm in Australia. The man-made losses is one large southern European credit loss, and a Brazilian water dam, and an uptick in the Tianjin port fire, which seems to become one of the largest man-made insurance events in history. Runoff result, 4.1%, is this a big number? Yes, it is clearly above our long-term average of 3.2%. But we are ending the year with a very strong balance sheet, so we are not harvesting our future. And actually, it is not so far off from last year when you compare it OE by OE. We had in 2014 more Fireman's Fund reserve increases than in 15. We had a substantial catch-up for Brazil and Russia. The catch-up for Brazil and Russia did not repeat. So when you actually do the negative OEs out, the other who contribute with positive runoff, pretty much same level as the year before, and as I said, a very strong balance sheet on December 31st. Also being confirmed by the announced Enstar deal from yesterday, we have quota shared 50% of our long tail liabilities in the U.S., that includes runoff from Fireman's Fund, asbestosis, workers' comp, and some other lines. And it was quota shared at book value. That means also the external provider likes our reserving strength. And both together in this partnership, we hope that in our joint work we can run off the old claims slightly better than anticipated, so that we both create a win-win out of the transaction. So if we move on to the page showing the individual countries and their property casualty results, Clearly, Germany reconfirming its strong last year combined ratio. Actually, Q4 started with a, or ended the year with a 90 combined ratio, which is really positive, and also the pricing environment still friendly. Italy, another strong year, 1 billion operating profit out of our Italian P&C shop is really a fantastic result. But France also catching up in size. AGCS looks at first glance poor with a 102.9 combined ratio, but please remember that they have taken up the cleanup work of Fireman's Fund, and the Fireman's Fund combined ratio standalone actually worsened because we sold the stable personal lines business, and we have only now half of the portfolio in commercial. We strengthened reserves there. We have built a lot of restructuring charges, and we are really cleaning up. So the old Fireman's Fund commercial business ended the year with 124 combined. Embedded in this 102.9 of AGCS, if you carve it out, the AGCS business, as you have seen it before, is at a 94 combined, which is actually a very strong result in a very difficult market, and they continue to do a great job here. Latin America, a very disappointing result altogether, 150 million loss. The only thing what has changed compared to the previous year, the worst country moved from Brazil further south, and it is now Argentina. Brazil is in a turnaround, a slowed down turnaround because of the poor economic environment. And Argentina, we are doing a reset for the business we are doing and have really cleaned it up in Q4 very strongly. Let me also point out that actually the worsening in Spain is explained that for Baremo, that are the new tables for bodily injury in Spain, we have already put this in our existing reserves for all open claims which might potentially be affected by Baremo tables in future. So another demonstration of sound balance sheet work. Short overview of the investment results, page 19 of the P&C segment. Yes, current yields going down as expected in the interest rate environment. However, average assets up, as you have already seen in previous quarters, and the non-interest rate items are just smaller negatives than the year before, so that the overall investment income is up. Moving to the life segment, same story as last quarter, continued progress in the mix change of new business. Hence, 5% less revenues and 1.5% less new business volume than the year before. However, in better quality, as I will show you on the new business margin page in a minute. Therefore, we are happy with all the numbers. Of course, for the U.S., we would really like to see even more growth than we have. We just couldn't repeat the great sales campaign of our FIA product. We are still running at a very high volume, as you will also see in a minute, when we look now on the operating profit. Page 23. 3.8 billion is a very big operating profit, and in the last quarter it was a contribution of 1.1. Well, is there actually a lot of one-offs in it? Yes, but the one-offs in realized gains was pretty much in the first quarter. Q3 and Q4 saw quite some offsetting effects on trading results, on FX and other derivatives. So when you look at the last 6 months in total, it looks much more stable. And an important driver actually of our investment margin is actually the US. In the meantime, we are making in fixed index annuity alone close to $1 billion of operating profit. $1 billion of operating profit, that is a double-digit growth over the year before, and additionally the dollar 20% higher valued than the year before. So in our investment margin, you see really a clear boost from our U.S. life business, and now you understand even more why we like fixed index annuity more than other products, and that we want to continue. The other movements in the profit by source is not a lot to mention. Sure, when you have, as we did in Q1, more realized gains, in particular in continental Europe, you are always get the offsetting impact from change in DAC. There is a faster amortization of your deferred acquisition cost. Hence, despite the high volume of new business, we don't have a growing DAC. We have actually a shrinking DAC, as you can see in the table, of minus 332 million. And I think that, probably the next question is, what would you say is the normal outlook for 2016? Well, when I take out the investment margin back to normal, I would say it probably goes down to 3.5. Then we have the year-end new business and the new business of the year 16. So around 3.6 would be for me the midpoint for the following year, as I assume that the strong contribution from the U.S. continues with further growth. Now moving to the new business margin, the value of new business in force around at 1,200, and that is the number post-tax cost of capital. So when you compare this to the operating profit number, we have actually a pretty high replacement value of our operating profit. Operating profit is roughly 2.5 to 3 years of pre-tax value of new business. So that should certainly be a strong positive outlook for the future. If we look at the new business margin, a completely different story between the first 6 months and the second 6 months. First two quarters were running at 1.5% new business margin, Q3 at 3.0, Q4 at 2.8, so with an average of 2.1, and in particular the last 6 months, a very good starting point for our 3% commitment in our strategic renewal agenda. So I think overall, the life business in good shape, yes, and maybe I should also have mentioned that in the operating profit we had to consume more than 200 million loss recognition in Korea, and that is in the operating profit outside of the goodwill impairment, which I mentioned. But that was a earlier quarter, not a Q4. Q4 had no special elements. Page 27 is always the demonstration that our investment margin and our current yields are big enough to cover our guarantees, because there is always the fear of everybody that we are running out of investment income and can't service the guarantees anymore. I think when you follow this page over the last years, we could demonstrate quarter after quarter that we are in very good shape here, and this fear is not justified. And as I said before, a normalized margin, I would say, at 85 bips, higher than we said in the past where we had it more at the 80 bips, but that is a higher weighting of our U.S. business, which drives this normalized number up. And now we move on page 29 to the first step into the asset management sector. Asset management, U.S. dollar is compensating for the high outflows altogether. where the high outflows, I think, are clearly going down. I told you in the last earnings call that PIMCO had even a small positive month in October. For the full quarter, Q4, PIMCO saw 11 billion outflows, with 3 to 4 billion inflows at Allianz Global Investors. Actually, for the segments, the net outflows were 8 billion. Still a big number, but I think where we started 15 months ago, great progress. And therefore, we are quite happy that we achieved what we achieved for the year. Now, looking at the revenue development, continuing pretty much the story of previous quarters, PIMCO's fee margin has stabilized at the 39 level. We are dancing around the 39 and ended the last quarter with 39.2, so slightly lower than the previous quarter. Also, Allianz Global Investors stable between 53 and 54 bips. So resulting for Allianz Global Investors in 12% internal growth and 20% nominal, and at PIMCO 20% drop, or corrected with the dollar, a 4% drop. On page 33, yes, the normal fee income is down almost a billion, just following the outflows at PIMCO, and that is before currency movement. Performance fees up to 607 million, not only that we had some individual performance fees, also the payback of the private fund Bravo One is clearly going at continues as predicted. And with 600 million, I think we have reached a very good level of performance fees, resulting in the overall expected number. We probably would have expected from a timing that more of the performance fees would already accrue or realize in 15, but as they are not lost, then the rest will accrue in 2016. As you have seen already in previous quarters, we are summarizing the whole FX effect in the last column, which gives us then the additional 300 million. And we are overall with the asset management sector within our target range. So the page on the corporate segment, that was 100 million lower in the quarter than the previous two quarters, now resulting into a loss of 945. That is actually more an internal accounting and consolidation issue, because the additional 100 million for pension accruals is then offset in the other German OEs across all segments, because in the consolidated statements, that is all covered under the IFRS 19, and there is no P&L impact. So it is more how we account for intercompany transactions. So I would hence expect for the year 2016 that we are getting closer back to our 2014 number. Also, I should mention that our Indian operations, which contribute close to above 40 million operating profit, we had in the past in operating or in the corporate segment, they are in 15 in the Asia-Pacific region. So, altogether, banking also slightly up, also I think holding and treasury, nothing very spectacular, pretty much business as usual. Now coming to the summary page, how to move from operating profit to shareholders' net income. I think I should highlight here the amortization of intangible assets. There is a small ongoing increase in this line coming also from the Unipol acquisition. Otherwise, the one-off of 171 million of goodwill impairment for the cash-generating unit, Asia-Pacific Life and Health. That are the biggest events. Therefore, when you would have expected a tax rate of around 30% instead of the 31%, yeah, well, a write-down of goodwill is, of course, tax-exempt, so you are not making any tax reimbursement on this one, hence the tax rate is one notch higher. This explains already most of the figures. Then I would like to close the presentation with the future page we are using to give you on a one-page the overview where we stand with our 2018 ambition. Left-hand side are all the quants, right-hand side all the health indicators. I consider the Solvency II interest rate sensitivity also a health indicator because that is a demonstration how fast we move the mix of our life new business and how fast are we getting out of long-term guarantees. With this, then I refer actually to the page 40 with the detailed definitions. I think that is for your reading. We use exactly this definition to define the numbers, and I hope we can then talk in the future more about it. Here, that is just establishing the starting point. Last page, then I'm done. Financial reporting from 2016 on, we want to make use of the EU Transparency Directive and adjust our quarterly releases. We will continue every quarter with an analyst presentation, a press release, and, of course, the analyst call and our call with the journalists. However, we will stop producing interim reports for Q1 and Q3. That means we will only do half-year accounts then with all the footnotes and disclosures. I hope that finds your agreement, but happy to get your feedback on this also on the roadshow. With this one, I hand over to Max.
Good afternoon. I will tell you something about the investment side. To start with a very boring page, that's 33. There you can see the segmentation of the overall investment portfolio. Nearly no changes, but there were a lot of changes behind the curtains. The life business as such have grown by 4% and P&C by 2%. Debt instruments by rating is nearly the same, only gradual changes. On the duration, Dieter already explained some changes on the liability side due to model changes. Overall, there was an increase of 0.5 years. What we did on the asset side, we really went for a longer duration. Overall, that means we increased it by active measures a little bit by more than half a year overall. Now going to page C4. What you can see here that overall, we cope very well with the declining interest rates by extending the duration. That's a safeguarding measure for our Solvency II position in general, and that allowed us in general also to increase our share in alternative assets, and I will come to that in a moment. I think that's the most interesting part on the investment side in general, because that's the part where you can earn some extra money, and if you think of the very low interest rates, that is very much needed overall. Now getting to page C5. That is now showing the overall Allianz investments, but not according to IFRS, but according to the real market values. That means it includes also real estate own use, the hidden reserves on the real estate portfolio, and some accrued interest on the debt portfolio. That means size-wise, it's a little bit, let's say, 30 billion higher than the IFRS view overall. What you can see that we have now invested 92 billion in so-called alternative investments. What do I mean by alternative investments? These are all investments which are not listed in a stock exchange, which is important. That means it includes real estate, infrastructure, equity and debt, renewables, but also private equity. and also the mortgage part. What are the expected returns? You can see them on the right-hand side. That is very much important. If we do not see these kind of returns, we will not grow overall the assets. What we can say right now, although there's some tightening going on, it's still possible to earn a decent extra return there, and that made it possible to grow the overall portfolio by 18 billion. Only to remind you, the last year we had only an increase of 10 billion. That means right now the production is really up and running. We have very good portfolio managers, especially on the Allianz Capital Partner side, but also at AGI. And it means it's now possible really to differentiate also against the competition. Going to page C6, there you can see which parts of the business we have grown significantly. And as you can see, nearly everything. Private equity is a little bit more difficult. We invest in private equity funds. But as you know, unfortunately, there are some paybacks over time. And therefore, it's more difficult to grow that part overall of the business than in the very long-term holdings we have, for example, on the infrastructure side, where every new deal usually is also growing the overall portfolio. That is a lot of work, I can tell you, because it costs us around 100 transactions, and you do them not in 1 second as buying an equity stock. It's more that you need a head time of 6 to 12 months, and that means it's really important that you start early with this kind of business. There are some examples you can see on the right-hand side of our investments. Only what I would like to mention, on the renewables part, we have concentrated mainly on Europe, but now are also going to the US. It's a very interesting market for us. It has a totally different regime. That means you can see also some diversification in that respect, and it's very often possible to even work without the subsidies from the state if you have a long-term buyer of the form of energy. That means you can already lock in the prices for the energy. Now going to page C7, what you can see, we tried to come up with a comparison versus our peer group, the peers which are best compared against us. By that I mean the European peers, Generali, AXA and Zurich. I think that's a very interesting exercise. We have to rely mainly on the public numbers, but also the numbers for the analysts, if we have access to them. And because since 2007 you are obliged to publish also the market value of the assets, you can try to calculate also the investment performance or total return. That is very interesting. That means not only book yields, but also changes in hidden reserves on the assets. That makes it possible at least to come up with an assessment of the overall investment performance. And as you can see, in the years 2007 to 2014, in the 8 years, we have achieved an overall total return of 5.2% and the competition of 4.7%. I think that's a large difference. I can't promise that for the future, but I think it's at least very promising. What is important that we have not achieved this wonderful performance with a lower credit quality. We also compare the credit quality by rating and the loss ratios which are behind the credit rating. We are a little bit above the average of the peers in general. Our current yield is higher than this of competition, what's also very nice. And I think the main reason is that we have advantages due to the very professional in-house asset management. That's not only PIMCO and AGI, it's also Allianz Capital Partners and Allianz Real Estate. And what we can see, and what's very difficult to compare, we are also way better diversified. Also, if I think of sovereign bonds, we really worked against these cluster risks the last years, and I think that we made a lot of progress in that respect too. Now coming to page C8, this is now the yield that is measured by IFRS. That means what we take into account is the current income of the group, and then the realized gains and losses, but also the changes in the book reserves. And if you add that up overall, you come up with a total performance of 1.2%. Is it a nice number? It could be higher, but to be frank, the year before we had a total performance of 11.8%. The main reason was that in 2014 the interest rates have fallen significantly. That means a lot of funny money in form from reserves, unrealized reserves. And now it went the other way around. In the year 2015, there was a small increase in interest rates, especially in the longer-term bonds. And that means you had some losses on the bonds as such. And therefore, the total performance of 1.2% is okay. If we measure against benchmarks, indices, what we do internally, it's bonus relevant for us, then you would see there was also an outperformance, but only a small one. Now, coming to page C9, and there you can see the new investment yields, a little bit lower than the year before, but still strong if you think of the current investment environment. On the P&C side, in average, 2.2%. On the life side, 2.5%. Only to compare that, the Bund yields right now are at 22 basis points for 10 years. Hopefully, they will go up a little bit during the year. But if you compare against the risk-free rates, it's still, I think, these are attractive yields overall. Now, coming to page C10. You know this comparison very well. We always compare for the life and health business the total yields, what we achieve on the assets, but more so on the reserves, because we hold more assets than reserves. That brings us in the year 2015 to 5.1%, and that compares with a minimum guarantee of 2.3%. That means still a very nice spread. That means all the guarantees are very much secure. And the same holds true if you think of the new business guarantees for the business with any guarantees is at 0.8%, and the reinvestment yield is already explained at 2.5%. Also, there is still a nice buffer. Now coming to page C11, that's more for the Q&A. That leaves me not with many questions to that. The overall question is right now, what is our exposure to the oil and gas sector? That is not so much interesting because of ESG, I think, but more because of the very low oil prices, and at least there's the assumption that we will see more defaults on the oil sector as such and on the gas sector. And what you can see, our overall exposure is pretty small. It's only 2% of the overall investment portfolio. That means 5% of our equity portfolio, that's 1.6 billion. And on the fixed income side, it's 10.7 billion, even lower, that means 2% overall. And if you think of the ratings, they're pretty much okay too. That means, in general, no large risk on oil exposure. To summarize that, more interesting, I think, was the development of the market this year. We have seen a lot of volatility. And this in all market segments, that means on the equity side, the maximum was a minus, depending on the index, between 10 and 18%. Right now, still, we are at minus 10 to 12% in most of the equity markets. And on the interest rate side, unfortunately, very low interest rates. Bund yields, I already mentioned, with 22 basis points. 10-year swap rates are at 56 basis points right now. That means also very, very low. And in addition to that, also higher credit spreads. What I like very much, but Solvency II-wise, it means all three things are working against the Solvency II numbers. That means we have to make sure that we can stand these kind of perfect storms. Overall, I think we implemented some measures also to lower the overall volatility, but as Dieter already mentioned, there's still something what we plan to do in that respect. Overall, my outlook for the year is still a positive one. I think equity markets are too cheap. Therefore, I'm optimistic that we will see some recovery that goes also for the interest rates. But to be fair, that can last a little bit longer because of the things that Mr. Draghi already have announced. At least there's some expectations around the market. But it could also happen similar thing what we have seen last year. Until April, very low interest rates, and then a big shock on the interest rate markets, where the markets went up by nearly 1 percentage point in 3 months. But let's wait for that. We have to prepare for all these scenarios, that's for sure. What we would like to do in general is to invest more in alternative assets to also get some additional liquidity spreads. I think that's very much important for us, too. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Oliver, Dieter, and Max, and with this, we are now happy to take your questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit one on your telephone. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star two. Once again, that's star one to ask a question. And we will take an opening question from James Shuck of UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking my questions. I had two questions, please. Firstly, could you just talk me through the sort of what your expected level of capital generation would be in any normal year? I'm kind of thinking about the pre-dividend accrual level of capital generation. And in particular, I'm kind of, if you're able to split that out for me and tell me what the life and health contribution is in euro terms. Obviously, we transitioned from the old Solvency I basis of capital generation, which we can see from the MCEV disclosure, into a Solvency II world. And I'm interested to see how the life and health side of things in particular compares under the new basis. That's my first question. Second question, just around the rollout of the digital agency. At the time when you presented on the German digital agency, you talked about the potential for a 25% increase in productivity. And I'm kind of keen to know where you are with that, whether those productivity levels are holding up as you had initially envisaged, and also the status of other countries as you've rolled out the digital agency in the latter part of 2015 and into the first part of this year, please. Thank you.
James, it's Dieter here. The expected level of capital generation, that is a very difficult question to answer, because even when we now create a formula, I bet with you there will not be a single quarter where we can demonstrate that it works like this, because there is so much volatility for many parameters. So actually, any number we give to you is then always being offset by the reality. And I'm afraid that I would actually create a misled to all of you, and it is much better when you just focus on our 2018 financial targets, because we are committed to manage the balance sheet and the growth of the business in the right direction. Maybe over the years, when we have more average quarters to produce, we can distill it down to a more useful guidance. But at the moment, I think that would be too early. On the digital agency, I think we have so far not yet a lot of experience how the first pilots are running, and we would give in summer, when we have a capital market day about digital only, we would give them some more details on this one.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will take our next question from Peter Elliott of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Thank you very much. I guess you highlighted the reason for being a bit prudent on the growth outlook for operating profit, and obviously the midpoint of your outlook is, I guess, 1% higher than it was last year. But I'm just wondering if you could help us on the sort of translation to EPS. Obviously, deployment of any excess capital would help bridge the gap to 5%, but I was just wondering if you could share your expectations on developments for the non-operating profit and also the impact of recent market volatility on the starting point there. Second question was just on the underperforming non-life businesses. You highlighted that Brazil might take a bit longer to turn around, but on Fireman's Fund, where you've obviously taken some restructuring charges, and Argentina, where there's been the reserve increases, would it be too optimistic to assume something quicker? I was just wondering if you could share your thoughts there. Thank you.
Sure. On Argentina and Fireman's Fund, we look for a quicker resolution. On the outlook and EPS growth, well, I think that is a great thing with EPS, that it has more input parameters than just the operating profit. I think I pointed already a little bit towards the tax rate, but also, look, we have promised that we will either use our M&A budget or return it. The M&A budget unused end of 15 is some 1.67 billion. M&A budget end of 16, assuming we wouldn't buy anything, is close to 3 billion. When you take 3 billion euros and whether you use it for M&A or you return it to shareholders, creates already an EPS enhancement of some 4 or 5 points. So actually, I think we are well set to deliver the number. And please, we said clearly our EPS growth target is in aggregate the 5% per year. That means we are interested to move the current 14.6 earnings per share to 16 or close to 17 euros in 2018. We are not planning to show a 1.25% progress by quarter. So that is certainly not in a strategic plan that you really schedule it like a Swiss train. And then I think I have answered both questions. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We will take our next question from Paul Dayoff of RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi there. Thanks for taking my questions. A couple of points, please. Firstly, on the kind of life business and new product development, I know you've obviously had great success in the US with the FIA product, and you talked previously about potentially trying to build an FIA product for Europe. I'm just wondering how that's going and if there's any anything you can talk about on how that is progressing. And then the second point is just on the asset management business and the purchase that you've made recently in AGI of the Rogue business. I just sort of wondering if you could expand a little on the thinking behind that, because obviously it's fixed income and it's also it wasn't necessarily the greatest business in Old Mutual's portfolio. So just wondering sort of why you think it's going to be better under AGI than it was under Old Mutual. Thanks.
Hello, it's Max. Only to start the question on the life side, fixed index annuities, we do not sell only in the U.S. We sell it also successfully in Germany and in Austria. The name is Index Select. There's also now, I think, growing interest into these products, but right now it's around 10% of the overall production there. The main reason for that is that the base rates are very small, and therefore there's also a yearly guarantee on that one. That means it's really attractive also to get some upside without big risk for the customers. It is not so easy to copy that product for other OEs because the main importance is you have also a very sound backbook to start with these kind of products. What we do, because we think most of the customers do not want only pure unit-linked products and want to carry all the risk, what we do is coming up with other hybrid products with some forms of guarantees included. And also, that is a new product we are planning for Southern Europe, is a unit-linked product with guarantees, at least where the overall risk per year is limited to a maximum of 10%. And because we think that is the future overall of the market in usual traditional products with pure fixed income investments and the very low rates you have right now, after cost, there's nearly nothing in it for the customers, and therefore you need some upside. That means the overall idea of fixed index annuities, we try to copy that one and bring that also to other markets, but these are mostly other forms of products.
Okay, and then the Roger question. Well, first of all, Allianz Global Investors needs to see that they are establishing a global footprint. UK is so far one of our weakest markets. So with the acquisition, I think we expand in the UK. That means we see also there then cross-selling opportunities on the top line. That is maybe less a point Old Mutual can claim where they have such a strong footprint in the UK. So quite a different situation. And I think also the global fixed income strategies which are being added by this RGP are filling a wide spot in AGI's capability profile. And you can be assured that the past performance has been reflected in the purchase price. So therefore, I think we are ticking all three boxes.
Okay, great.
We will take our next question from Farooq Hanif of Citi. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I'm assuming that you haven't been asleep year to date as markets have fallen. So I was wondering if you could give us a guide to the kind of management actions that you've been taking, because naturally what's going to happen is as you get into 180 to 190 range, everyone's going to speculate that, you know, what's the rip, Allianz falls below 180, et cetera, et cetera. So I wondered if you could talk about that. Secondly, in the alternatives portfolio, how much of that is can we think of being allocated to life and how much to non-life? Is that important? Because just want to understand because of the yield implications of where that alternative portfolio is allocated in the business. And I guess lastly, partly to Paul's question, we've seen a deceleration of net flows. Sales as well have been weak in life, and that's understandable given what you're doing in that business. But are we going to be facing this for a few years now as you shift the new business mix? Or can we see sort of revenue, top line, net flow, recovery happening by the end of the year? Thank you.
Well, when I start with your last point, actually, when you see that 15 over 14 on average, our life reserves, that means the basis for the earnings is 8% higher. So we have a natural source also here of income, even when the net inflows were very strong in the unit link space, but we had outflows in traditional, which is actually not so bad. The volatility in Solvency II, that is actually, and here it simplifies our organization, that is really a one-segment topic. So we are only dealing with our life and health segment in this question. P&C, it is really not very material and therefore not relevant to do it. We do a full suite of activities, and as usual, we really like to talk about it when we have done it and when there is the next reporting date with the Q1 results. We are not making any announcement of what we are doing and not doing, because also why would we set up a financial market on movements we might plan? That is, with the volume we are acting on, that would be really a bad message to the market. But I can also tell you that we are a pretty quiet investor and not panicking over the current volatility of the markets.
Yeah, it's next. Only to add to that, at least I can give you the ratio of puts we have in place for the equities. This is 28%, only said you know that, and overall, that means there are some measures in place. That is not new, only to say that. We're always working with puts overall, only to prevent us, if there's a real crash, that we have to fire sale something. Then to the question of the alternatives, I do not have the number here in front of me. I can give you only some guidance in that respect. If you think of the mortgage business is usually long-term, 10 years plus. That's mainly with the life business. private placement, it's also the same, mainly life business, not P&C, infrastructure debt. There's some short-dated debt, but most of that is also long-dated, and long-dated goes always into the life portfolios. Real estate, we have both. That means on P&C and on the life side, and that's where it's split. Private equity also, we do it in the P&C and in the life business. Infrastructure equity is usually also purely for the life business. And renewables, it's the same. That's mainly, or the core is only with the life business, only to give you an idea, yes?
Okay. Thank you.
We will take our next question from Vinit Malhotra of Mediobanca. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, good afternoon. Hi. Thank you. So just on the life, the first question is on the technical margins. It seemed to me that the quarterly run rate hasn't been really going as high as the outlook is progressing. And Dieter, I just wanted to double check. You did try to suggest that it wasn't really investment income driven. I mean, this increase in outlook. But we aren't really seeing the trend in the technical margin. So I just wanted, obviously, to understand a bit more about the outlook increase, but also whether it is technical margin driven or loadings driven or investment margin driven. So that's the first question. Second question is just on the alternative assets again for Max. I remember in the Investor Day, a slightly smaller number, maybe 86 billion was shown, and we suddenly see a 92. Is it all mark to market, or has there been a lot of activity in the last few months at Allianz? Lastly, if I may just ask, on the M&A strategy, is it a fair understanding that there was a bit more, not emphasis, but a bit more talk about it at the Investor Day when the targets were presented? And is it the volatile markets which have caused you to tone it down a bit? So just a very quick comment. Thank you.
I start with the life outlook. The technical margin will certainly grow also. I'm foreseeing an improvement there in 2016 if everything goes to plan. However, the big swing factor in the investment margin is, as I said before, the higher weighting of our U.S. business, because all the profits of a fixed index annuity policy are showing up in the investment margin. There is no technical profit, so to speak. It's all investment income over expenses and customer return. And that is, I think, the biggest driver for the higher base point number I mentioned. And the rest, we have normalized to a normal flow of turnover in our portfolio, which we had also in the last two quarters. We had, I think, realized gains of around 1.2 billion, and that is just what you almost automatically create with the size of the portfolio and some active management.
Coming to the question to the alternatives at the Capital Markets Day, I think I've shown the portfolio in the third quarter 2015 that was at 86 billion. Now we are at 92 billion. The 6 billion, I can't tell you whether that's only transactions or also some additional returns coming from market and valuation. I assume so, because overall for the total year, we do that, the valuations for part of the assets also quarterly. The overall performance of the alternatives in the real estate in this year were double digit. That means also some price increases, not only new transactions, but I can't tell you from the 18 billion as increase of the alternative investment portfolio how much was performance and how much was transactions. What I only can say, a little bit more than 10% was the overall yield on the alternatives last year.
Thank you.
Let me, Oliver here, that's mm-hmm. the Oliver Bethe, not the Oliver Schmidt, talk a little bit about M&A, because that's lingering on the minds, and investors have mentioned that to us and to me specifically. Let me reinforce the following item. We've, I think, built nicely over the last few years a record of being disciplined on acquisitions. We have said we want to invest in property casualty, particularly in countries where we have strong operations and want to build further scale, and therefore consolidate and reinforce our positions over time, and where we have management teams that can actually integrate. That remains unchanged. The second question we get is, what are the return hurdles? We have the same return hurdles for acquisitions that we have for our in-force. We want over time to have 15% RORAC or 13% ROE. That is also the case for our acquisitions. That is obviously a long-term average. And we want to make accretive acquisitions. That's also important. And we are certainly not interested to acquire something against issuing huge amounts of stock. So just let me reiterate. So going out and buying a gigantic company at this point in time is not on the agenda, so you don't need to be worried about that. At the same time, we believe this environment will separate the strong from the weak ones. You will particularly, I think, see a lot of conglomerates that have strong home markets but very weak portfolios outside of the home market disposing of peripheral operations that might be good in the core and might be fit to us, and we're systematically looking at that. We have been looking at that. In many cases, over the last few years, prices were too high, but with valuations coming down and companies being under pressure to clean up their portfolios, to meet solvency calls and all the other things, we feel we are in the position to take advantage of our relative strength, and that is what we are intending to do. Again, applying strict discipline on the financial criteria. And we expect and hope for your support in that strategy. Thank you.
Thanks, Oliver. Thanks for the clarification. Thank you.
We will take our next question from Michael Huttner of JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you very much. On the solvency, I'm a bit puzzled because you have huge buffers in Germany, so you have this 300% solvency there, 200 at the group level. And I just wondered why these buffers are not helping moderate the volatility we're seeing, you know, with the ratio now, excluding management actions, at about 180%, which is at the bottom end of your target range. So I just wondered if you could talk about that. On the mega deals, and you just said, Oliver, that you would look forward to a support there, and Vinit said yes. What does support mean? Does it mean you'd like us to write nice things about it, or does it mean you'll ask shareholders for money? And then, if I may, a last question. So in your presentation, Oliver, you repeated or said again what I understood from the Investor Day, which is that the life business would shrink the capital allocated or make it more efficient in some way. And I think Mr. Zimmer presented a figure of $3 billion, which is not in the kind of budget for the group, so this would help EPS on top. Can you talk a little bit about that? Sorry, it's three questions. Thank you.
Michael, Oliver here. I'll take the easy questions. I'll leave the difficult ones to Dieter and Max. Let me tell you, what I wanted to say is I assume that based also on our investor perception study and support that staying disciplined on the things we have been doing, that it is also meeting your expectations. The reason why I'm mentioning that we occasionally get a question around under all circumstances, do pay dividends or do share buybacks. If you take this to an extreme and say that's the only way to run a company, you put a company into runoff. So you need to get the balance right between appropriate returns on capital, and we've clearly said that, earnings growth, i.e., and again, the way how do you deal with capital that is building up and that you're not using. And we are absolutely committed to not have capital sitting idle in the company, but we also don't want to waste it on M&A. Now, we cannot wish for the right M&A targets to come at every point in time when it would be perfect in terms of timing. So we need some flexibility over time. But as we have said, between now and the end of 2018, we'll not accumulate money and have it lying around. So that discipline you can expect. But we, as Dieter said earlier, we're not managing these numbers by the day, the month, or the quarter. We are in a long-term business, and we're managing for the long-term growth of the business. So that is what I wanted to say. If you get consecutive systems or people say, we don't know what to do with your capital and we're therefore just paying it out or buying it back, that's short-term a great message. Long-term, that's a disaster, I think. Sorry to say.
No, that's a very good point. Thank you.
Michael, you are fully right. There is a dampening effect from the standalone solvency of Stuttgart, our life business in Germany, to the group numbers. However, that is already included in the sensitivities we have disclosed, so that is in the end, the net figure which we have calculated for the sensitivities, and therefore it is already all in, so to speak. And when you see that two mid-size OEs, Korea and Switzerland, actually with a change of EIOPA's view how the interest rate curve should be designed, actually we have shown with a lot of capital market material and a lot of base data that the Swiss interest rate curve published by EIOPA is much too conservative, and they are actually not following their own rules they apply for other currencies, that these two markets are actually moving our interest rate sensitivity 3 points up. That shows you only how sensitive the Solvency II models are and this calibration question. And I really hope that we can focus on working with the model and have not to face every now and then an interference from the regulator coming up with some new formula, because the people as the regulator have been hired to write technical papers and otherwise they are running out of job. And that is something we have certainly to manage going forward.
You could, I suppose, make their job lighter by, instead of letting them be employed by EIOPA, by employing them at Allianz. Sorry about that. Just on the 3 billion?
Yes, that was the number which you picked up from Mark's Capital Markets Day slides. We have not explicitly integrated it in any of the targets, but it is actually for us a number which we have demonstrated that 5% EPS growth over the 3 years is not completely unrealistic, and that is a view which has probably not completely transpired in all analyst reports.
So I take this to mean that although we might not see any of the 3 billion this year, we'll definitely see something next year so that it kind of boosts ETS, is that fair?
Whenever it comes, yeah.
Whenever it comes, okay.
I will mention it when we see it.
Okay, no, that's fair. Thank you very much. Thanks for answering my question.
We will take our next question from Andrew Ritchie of Autonomous. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Oh, hi there. First question on P&C, Dieter. I think you mentioned that large man-mades were 6 points in Q4, discrete Q4. Maybe just for the year as a whole, can you tell us where you think man-made losses were versus some kind of normalized level or where you would have expected them to be? Again, we've asked this question several quarters. Is there a trend here in large losses? Is this random? Obviously, it's come up for debate a bit more in 2015. But basically, I want to know where they are versus a normal year. Second question, Oliver, you mentioned you're more cautious on the outlook for asset management given the market. Can you just give us any sort of qualitative information as to how the market turmoil has affected PIMCO year to date? Has there been the necessity to build more cash buffers? Has it significantly affected flows? Is there significant mark-to-market issues for some of the illiquid credit? But just some color there would be useful. And a very short question for Max. Max, just looking at the unrealized gains on corporate bonds, even though your energy exposure is quite low, I noticed that the stock of unrealized gains fell 25% in the quarter, which seems quite high when spreads didn't do an awful lot. Did you realize a lot of gains in corporate bonds in Q4, or was there some sort of asset shift? I'm just surprised the stock of unrealized gains on corporate bonds fell so much. Thanks.
I start with man-made losses because I can give you here a man-made answer. So 6.4% were the large losses in Q4. Our average for the year was 4.4, and it's actually 0.1% lower than 2014, where we were at 4.5%, and our 10-year average is 4.0. Is there a trend in it? I don't think so. We had in Q4 concentrated two losses together of 200 million and an uptick of the Tianjin port loss. It seems now that the Tianjin port loss is becoming one of the largest losses ever. Some people are talking that it could, in total insured losses, coming close to September 11th, which is an unbelievable size, I feel. And then as our share in it is really, really small. So I think that is, and then we had, in 14 we had more of this, some spectacular airline losses, which made the headings for quite some time. So is this a trend? No, I don't think so.
And it's fair to say then, for the year as a whole, man-mades were not particularly unusually high then?
No, it's 0.1% lower as a percentage. It is slightly up in absolute number, but our net and premium grew by more than 6%. So when you divide man-made losses by net and premium, it moved from 4.5% to 4.4% in 2015.
Okay.
Okay, coming to the question about unrealized gains and losses and also how you manage this kind of volatility, especially on the asset management side, it's true, for example, for PIMCO, it's not so easy to cope with that one. If you have a large mutual fund and there's outflows, and especially driven by market development, you have to hold more cash than usually necessary, and that's a drag on your overall performance. But what I can tell at least that PIMCO, although if you think of the total return fund, they had these outflows, managed that very well because they had last year's strong outperformance in that respect. Now coming to the unrealized gains and losses, I can't tell you the split of the minus 17 billion in change in unrealized gains and losses. In that number, there's also 3 billion coming from the U.S. business at, let's say, 14 billion. But I can't assure you we haven't sold a lot of corporate bonds in the last quarter. There was no necessity to do so. Overall, if you think of the corporate spreads and also of the interest rate movements, the last quarter of 2015 was a pretty quiet one. That means no special actions in that respect.
Which is why I'm surprised the unrealized gains fell so much on your corporate bond portfolio.
You say in one quarter, where did you pick that number?
Looking at the disclosed unrealized gains on corporate bonds that you give in your appendices every quarter.
Okay, I have to look it up, and then let's see whether I find something special in there. You're right, it can't be only the oil exposure, that's for sure, because our exposure is not very large.
Mm. And just on PIMCO, I'm just trying to understand, the additional caution, is that because of the experience to date in PIMCO, or is it more hedging events for the year as a whole?
No, it's just for the year as a whole. You know, that if the markets are down 10%, what does that do to AUM in the active asset management piece? You know how we're being compensated. So that is a general caution. If volatility goes up and markets go down, that has an effect. Now, we have some counter effects on bond portfolios, you know, having increased in value. And we believe that the precision with which you can make forecasts is just lower in this environment than we've had in the past. Nothing in particular about the first 6 weeks.
Okay, thanks. And for Max, for reference, it's slide C18 that I'm interested in follow-up on.
Sorry, you mean C18? That's a complete year?
The stock of unrealized gains on bonds.
Brilliant. And you compare, you take only the numbers from C18, or you take also some numbers from the Capital Markets Day? Otherwise, it's only...
I'm judging that versus the Q3 reported results.
Oh, no, it's a little bit complicated.
Okay, I can follow up. It's fine.
The Q3 results. At least I need some time to check it, okay?
Sure. Okay, it just looks like a big move, but I can follow up.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
We will take our next question from Thomas Seidel of Bernstein. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. Three questions. First two on the targets. I come back to the 3 billion life capital release target. At the Investor Day, I think you showed us because of de-risking that the required capital had fallen. Yet when I look at numbers now, year on year, it has grown by 9.5% from 20 to 22 billion. So my first question is, what keeps you confident that with management action you can really produce the 3 billion given the headwinds from the macro side? Second question is on the combined ratio and the P&C. The target is 94. It seems like it's creeping up now, 94.6, pricing at 1, claims frequency up, and slow turnarounds in LATAM. Can you give us a flavor or color on how these actions you presented at the Investor Day are coming through in terms of impact? In other words, is the combined ratio of the next 2 years actually more rising and then only towards 18 falling, or what is sort of the dynamics you have in mind there? And the third question is on the asset side, you showed the relatively modest exposure to energy, but I think you still have quite some exposure to the financial and the bank sector, and I wonder, given the weakness of the bank sector in Europe, what you think about the contagion risk Allianz has to some of the weakness in European banks via bonds and equities.
Okay, I'm starting with all three, and then my colleagues adjust and complete my answers. Yes, for sure the risk capital consumption for the life segment increased Q4 over Q3, and I gave you already the explanation with the changes driven by EIOPA technical changes, which we did not expect when we prepared our Capital Markets Day. However, I believe that our de-risking plans over the years should still hold up. And on something like this, in the end, we can only prove it by delivery and not by now showing you a list of action we might consider. So it is really proof point dependent, and that is what we are continue to do. On the 94 combined ratio, I mean, with 94.6, you can say overall we are not this far away. Latin America is the first place to pick, but we are working in general on every sub-portfolio which is above 100 combined. And when we tackle all of them and are only halfway successful on these, then I think you see already enough improvement in the combined ratio. So I would not be concerned about this target. And actually, I also would argue that the dependency on combined ratio improvement in our industry, looking at the recent announcement of big competitors, they are all under pressure to improve combined ratios, which should help from a market competition point of view. On the asset side, yes, it is true that we have a bigger number against the financial sector banks, but you have to subtract from this all the covered bonds, which I would exclude from a direct exposure to the quality of the bank balance sheet. And our exposures on subordinated against banks or also equities are fairly modest in relation to the size of our portfolio. But maybe Max can add to this one.
Perhaps I would first come back to the unrealized gains and losses on the corporate portfolio. It was the number from 30th of September 2015 was 4.7 billion as hidden reserves and then it went down to 3.5. That is not very large if you think of the overall size of the portfolio. This was mainly driven by interest rate hikes in the U.S. because we have there very long-term corporate bonds, and due to the interest rate impact in the last quarter, some of the hidden reserves went out overall out of the portfolio. It was nothing special that we had sold something or something like that.
Banking?
Yes, banking, coming back to the banking, 16% of our banking, of our corporate exposure is on the banking side. This is 32 billion overall, and if you think of the quality in general, it's mainly, what is it, 95% is investment grade, 17% is triple B, 52%, that means the bulk of that is single A. The main reason for that is that most of the banks are in that bucket, therefore also nothing special in that. What I really can say, and I'm a little bit proud of that, we are continuously really decreasing our banking exposure. That means within the corporate segment, we try to reduce the banking exposure as such. The main reason of that is not that we do not have trust in the banks, but that banks seems to be some kind of cluster risk.
All right, thank you.
We will take our next question from the line of Nick Holmes of Societe Generale. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much. Two questions. The first is realized gains in the life business. Your policy of extending durations this year has obviously generated a lot of gains, really boosted your operating earnings. Now, I know you've already guided that you don't expect the life segment to grow very much, but I wanted to ask, how should we expect you to manage the realized gains this year? I mean, the comparative, obviously, is a very difficult one, which you must therefore bear in mind for your investment strategy. The second question is looking at your energy exposure. Notice that most of it's in the life segment, and wanted to ask, what sort of guidance would you give to us as to the shareholder exposure? I mean, a lot of that is going to be on a 90-10 basis, but would it be unwise of us to take something like 90-10? Should we be taking more like 50-50? Just your thoughts on that would be very much appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, coming to the last question, it's next. No, it's the same split as usual. There's nothing special in that one, and if you think of the 2% only, the quota of the overall portfolio, it would have a minor impact in general, and that means there's no reason why we could not pay any guarantee because there is a default on an energy stock or bond. But that is not what I expect. You have provided you also with the rating numbers. That means there's nothing special. And only to remind you, there are very large players in that bucket. Take Royal Dutch or Exxon, and I do not see that there is a real default risk in general. I only wanted to say that the overall impact of the energy crisis on our portfolio will be a very, very small one in general. Now coming to the question, and that is more difficult to answer, how much we would usually realize as on the bond reserves or hidden reserves on the bond side, it's true. Usually this is not driven by, let's say, going for higher operating profit numbers. It's more driven by actions on the fixed income portfolio. And if you do a duration lengthening, usually you have to sell some bonds. There's no other possibilities. We do not hold so much cash. And because we did that last year, lengthening by 0.5 to 0.6 years actively, you have to sell some bonds. And as you know, we have still high hidden reserves on the bond side. I would not expect the same amount for every year, only to say that, but I cannot exclude it in general, because what we are usually very much steering is the current yield in our portfolio, and we do not want to spoil the current yield. You know, overall, every year, the current yield on the life side goes down by, let's say, around 0.1, and I think that's a steady pace, and we would not like to increase it by taking too much hidden reserves out of our portfolios.
Thank you very much for that. Just a very, very quick follow-up. So would it be right to say that your policy of extending durations is sort of still happening? You know, it's not something that was an event that took place last year. It's still something that you're looking to do as appropriate.
In general, we would like to have a matched approach for the new business. You know that that is our overall target, but that doesn't mean that we close every time the duration. It's very much depending on the situation of the companies as such and what are the risks from the duration gap. And it's also depending on our interest rate outlook. Therefore, I can't say or make a general judgment on that one.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
And Nick, it's Dieter here. You have also to remember that we have also a lot of normal maturities in the life portfolio. That means duration lengthening. You can also do with new investments. You don't need to sell always old papers to achieve it. And the guidance I have given for the average investment margin is assuming a normalized flow of realized gains. That means also no special action that you would get more realized gains due to lengthening activities.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you very much.
We will take our next question from Michael Haid of MainFirst Bank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much, Michael Haid, MainFirst Bank. Good afternoon to everybody. Three questions. First question on the operating profit target 2016. As you mentioned, it includes some degree of prudence, also owed to the low interest rate environment. I wonder how much have the first 6 weeks of this year affected this operating profit target, the recent market turmoils. Second question, on AGCS, the combined ratio of 94%, in a very competitive environment, to what extent is that driven by reserve releases or abnormal reserve releases, and why can you perform so well in this competitive environment? Last question on the fixed indexed annuity. You mentioned close to $1 billion U.S. dollars of operating profit come from the fixed indexed annuity book. That is very strong in my view. How resilient is this figure to lower sales? Not that I expect this, but I would like to get a feeling for the sensitivity of declining sales to this operating profit.
Well, Michael, let's start backwards. The profit in fixed index annuity we make on the reserves, so on the accumulated investments, and it is a more than $100 billion portfolio, mainly corporate bonds, triple B. That is maybe also an additional answer to the question why the unrealized gains on the portfolio did move, because these are 10-year bonds. I would say it is a very stable source of operating profit. Only when the customer would all run away, then the profit falls apart. As long as the customers are staying and we don't see any movements in surrender or lapse rates, so it looks to be a stable portfolio where we have more net inflows than maturities, so it is still a growing number. AGCS had indeed quite some runoff, but we had the same runoff in previous years, so it is a very stable number. Why is it better than the competition? Well, I think we have maybe missed some growth opportunities, and with the missed growth opportunities, we missed also chances for some higher man-made losses. So it is an underwriting and bottom line focused approach, and I think AGCS has delivered since it started a year by year improvement in its underwriting discipline, and it is certainly within the Allianz organization one of the leading organization or the leading organization for writing complex and commercial business. Is our OP target 2016 affected by the current volatility? Yes, for sure we have increased the range around it because we feel that the year still might have more surprises than the first 6 months when it's getting back to a more stable environment, then we have certainly plenty of time in the upcoming quarters to refine the outlook for the year.
But not the absolute level. It's more the volatility of the operating profit which has been affected.
Well, I would say both. I think we have left the upper end stable.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We will take our next question from Jochen Schmidt of Metzler. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I have just one question on digitalization. Could you provide a figure for online distribution in your German operations in 2015 as well as a comparison with 2014? That's my question. Thank you.
I think Oliver will dig it up and then send it out because I think it takes a minute to find it correct. Yeah. We're digging it up. It will come to you in a few minutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Maybe it's a good time before we get to very much the fine details of the numbers that I'd like to give you a little bit of a top-down view reflecting on your very good questions, and thank you for those. I think the question we just had on the outlook and the level and volatility is nicely summarizing really the questions that you may have looking at our disclosure. Maybe we could give you the following feedback. Allianz has had a very strong year, and we are looking to capitalize on a number of strong years and a very strong balance sheet. We believe the volatility in the markets around us, as said a little earlier, will create significant opportunities for us, and we would like, if I may say so, point out to the fact that we want to keep our powder dry for the opportunities that are coming. And if you are to interpret the way we are communicating today and the way the numbers have come out, please keep in mind that we are taking a measured approach to earnings per share growth, that we want to make sure that nothing we are doing is threatening the stability and the strength of our balance sheet, and we want to be able to move when the time is right. Maybe that helps you in an environment that is increasingly getting nervous and concerned about where to put the money. Max had said it very nicely. If you can get, you know, zero for investing in a bond and 5% minimum dividend yield in Allianz, you know, I have my money here. If that is of any consideration for you, that's the better investment.
All right. Thank you, Oliver. I think with that we should close the call. Thank you very much for your time and for your interest. We wish you a very nice remaining afternoon, and we hope that we will see you next week on one of our analyst meetings. Thank you.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.